everyone, and welcome to Minute 32 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is John of the Dirty Harry Minute. Welcome back, John.
Thank you for having me again, Rob. Glad to be back.
Yeah, well, we had a nice, fun conversation yesterday, so I figured why not have you back to talk a little more about Neil and Dell and diners, and we'll even get into some money discussions here. Who knows?
Oh, greenback. Love it.
So Minute 32 begins with Dell explaining who Bert Dingham is and ends with Neil opening up Dell's wallet. So this is a very dialogue-heavy minute. There's a lot that goes on between the two of them. Yesterday, we ended the minute by Dell explaining that they can take the train instead of having to wait around for the airlines, and that his friend Bert Dingham can help him out. So he said that I sold them all their shower curtain rings. He owes me a favor. And then the waitress comes and hands them the check, and Dell is about to take it. And then Neil grabs it from him and says, I'll get that. I paid for everything else. Why break precedent? which is a great, now the waitress brought them their check, but isn't Neil still eating his oatmeal? You'd think that they would wait. When I'm in a restaurant, I have enough trouble convincing the waiter to come over to give me my check because they want me to want more, to order something else. But once they give you the check, that's it. Unless you've asked for the check, and there's no place here where they actually ask for this check. So it's pretty interesting that they have this. Now, Neil then reaches into his pocket to pull out his wallet, and it actually takes him quite a long time to get the wallet out. Much longer than you'd expect, because he should know where his wallet is and stuff like that. And Dell's response to Neil's quip about not breaking precedent is, you're making me feel like a freeloader. So the response by Neil is, get me on the train or square. You got it. Now, Dell gives up pretty quickly with that type of thing. I mean, I remember years ago when I was dating, so if the girl wanted to pay for her food in the restaurant or whatever, so we'd have a little bit of an argument about that because, especially on a first date or whatever, I wanted to pay for it. So Dell gives in pretty quickly here at this point, showing that he really does want Neil to pay. Doesn't it seem that way to you?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You wear a tie and I'm wearing a bow tie. Come on, you can afford this. I can't. Yeah, he doesn't resist nearly as much as he should.
Yeah.
I had a question about, sorry to interrupt. Is there sort of country music playing in the background?
There is.
Is that a bit weird for the Northwest?
Yeah, it's usual for, well, first of all, we're not in the Northwest. We're here
Midwest.
We're in the, I guess you can say, the deep part of the Midwest, because this is Kansas.
Right.
Looking at American geography, so it's the border between East and West, which is where they are. So it's not like Texas or anything like that, where there would clearly be much more music that sounds like country music, but here it still fits. I tried figuring out what the song is, but I wasn't able to figure that out. Did you have any luck with that?
No, I tried to Shazam it, but it's not quite high enough in the mix. I just thought it was weird if you'd sort of get that type of music this far north. But like we were saying before, I was off air, I was reading a Bob Dylan biography, and he was from Minnesota, right? Or sort of near the border.
I believe so, yeah.
Duluth or whatever, near Canada. And even in the 50s, he could pick up a lot of like country western playing from Georgia or something. So it had quite a wide remit, but. Yeah, I have no experience of diners in America. They're very exotic to me about who goes there, how it sort of is it a classless place where everyone can go, or do generally only people, travelers and truck drivers go there? I don't know.
Right, I would say it's usually the lower to mid class that are going to be going there. The upper class are not going to. Neil does not look comfortable here. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Especially because he's in a suit, but his tie is open a little bit. So that gives him a little bit of thing. And at this point, Neil starts going through his wallet and then opens it and discovers that it's completely empty. Now, again, as we discussed yesterday, they do a great zoom into the wallet to show his it accentuates the fact that he's surprised by the fact that his wallet is completely empty. And Dell continues drinking his coffee and says, "That's the easy part." And then Neil just stares at him, and Dell says, "What? You know goddamn well what."
He swears the first time in the movie. Yeah,
that's right. "I'm sorry, I don't." Now, you see the tone starting to get higher and higher between the two of them, because Dell is a little bit taken aback by this whole thing. And then Neil's response is, "I had over $700 in here." Now, that's a lot of money to be carrying around.
In 87,
In 87. Sure. I mean, I checked with inflation. With inflation, as of 2022, that's $1,700, which is even absurd. I mean, why would someone go on a small little, you know, business trip for just a few days and take that much money with them? That's a lot of money. And then we get Dell's response where he goes, "I didn't take your dough." Now, where do you think that phrase comes from, dough, referring to dough as money?
It doesn't really explain why it is, but I know the do re mi thing bit. I don't know. No, I don't really know. Enlighten us, dude.
Okay, so dough is obviously connected to the fact that a lot of people used to refer to money as bread. Okay, in the 1930s, it was very commonplace, especially in gangster areas and stuff like that, to referring to money as bread. So, you know, jumping from bread to dough isn't that much difference, because bread means some sort of form of sustenance, which is actually something that goes back even earlier to the 1700s, where people would say that the fishermen would get their bread out of the water to keep them from starving. They're talking about, you know, some sort of thing to help you survive. Then you have the whole idea of breadwinner, which is something that was first used in 1818. And bread also is a slang for money that is a playful substitute for dough. And it's actually interesting, because you can think of the way that the, you know, dough is something that is needed, you know, KNEAD. And money is something that is needed, NEED.
So many depths. You think if the criminals use the word bread, or they popularize that that metaphor, that dough might be a cool way to say what do you call it? Counterfeit money or something.
Could be.
Wow, yeah. You've gone good research here, man.
That's so awesome. And there are a whole bunch of other phrases that refer to money that I'd never even heard of. Have you ever heard the phrase wonga?
Yes, that's my British thing, isn't it?
It is.
Is that more English?
It is. Yeah. Now, first of all, when I hear wonga, I think of, you know, Bib Fortuna from Return of the Jedi. You know, that's a phrase that sounds like something he said. Yeah. And so wonga is actually a term that they don't know when it exactly was first used, but they think it was in the 18th or 19th centuries. And it's a Romani word meaning coal. And during that time in the 18th, 19th century, coal was the term used in English language for money. And that's where that phrase comes from. Now, have you ever heard the phrase moolah?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so there's another phrase used for money. It was first used in around 1905 in the United States. And the etymology is that they say that it's originally a word that's Fijian, from the island of Fiji, which means money. But there's a lot of argument as to whether it really came from there or not. Then you have score. Have you ever heard that being referred to? I mean, I've heard of you know, a score in a heist job or something like that, but not necessarily in the phrase of just talking about money itself. So it actually refers to 20 pound bills. because a 20 is a score. And it says that it originated from the days of sheep herding, where herders would leave a tally or a score when they counted 20 sheep.
Wow.
So there's that. Then you have monkey. I've never heard of this before, being used as a term for money. Have you ever heard that?
Never.
So monkey is actually a term used to describe 500 pounds. And they say that it actually comes from the fact that British soldiers who returned from India after serving there.
Yeah.
So the 500 rupee note had a picture of a monkey on it. So they'd start referring to the 500 pound note by the same thing as a monkey.
Interesting.
Yeah. Then you got.
I know in the Spanish language, they've got a lot of colorful words, words for money. Colloquially, I guess they just call la plata for silver is what they call money. But there's a whole lot of words too. What about dosh? Have you come across the word dosh?
No.
I wonder if that's. I don't know if that was. Maybe that's a Yiddish word or something. But
no,
I heard that
not.
A lot of old gangster movies. Okay, a lot of old film noir gangster movies.
Oh wow. Yeah. Right. I mean, I found a few others, but we're not going to go into Scratch, Finn, Jack, and Wampum.
Jack, I've heard. Was that for the original pound or shilling?
It was a small
coin.
We may
have used that in Australia.
It was a small coin, and it likely refers to the fact that someone hit the jackpot.
Okay.
Right. So, yeah, that's what I found about different types of terms using referring to money. So then we continue with their conversation. Dell says, I didn't touch your dough, Neil. I'm a lot of things, but I'm not a thief. Which, that's an interesting thing for him to admit, that he's a lot of things. I don't know what things he's referring to, but he is a lot of things.
He's a moocher. He's a tight ass. I don't know. All the things that Neil thinks he is. What's interesting is they both, different people, but similarly they all know pretty much how much is in their wallet. I suppose we'll learn later why Dell has to know how much he has, but Neil
yeah but would, I wouldn't know. Well, first of all, Neil says I had around $700. I had over $700
around. Yeah.
Oh, over. Yeah. So there you go. But we're gonna get to Dell in a second, which is just completely crazy with what he says. So so Dell denies being a thief, and then Neil says, you went into my stuff last night, right? And his response is, I didn't take your money and I don't care for the accusation. And Neil's response is, well, I had over $700 in here and you went into my wallet for pizza. Now, you probably have absolutely no idea what he's referring to there, because in the original script, there's a scene where they actually get a pizza and beers. Okay, mm-hmm. Now the person who steals their money is actually the pizza boy, based on an argument that he has with Dell. But when the pizza boy came and Dell needed to pay him. So when.
Right, because he didn't tip him or something.
That's right. So when the pizza boy came and got into this argument and Dell needed to pay him, Dell couldn't find his wallet. So he went and took money out of Neil's wallet. So Neil paid for the pizza.
That's a nice little touch. You know, it's probably not worth having in the film. If you're going to do like a Judd Apatow 3-hour version of this movie, maybe it would be a funny little addition. But that's cute. Okay, that makes a whole lot more sense than just some weird guy breaking into there. Yeah,
exactly. And then the response is just maybe when you went into it, you had to. And then Dell pulls out his wallet and slams it down on the counter and says, "Count it." And then Neil's response is, like, you'd keep it in there if you stole it. And then he says...
That's a good point, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
He says, there's $263 in there. If there's a dollar more, then you can call me a thief. Just count it. Now, 260, that's a pretty exact amount. As I started saying before, I wouldn't know that I have exactly $263 in my wallet. So according to inflation, that's $645 in 2022. So the inflation rate from 1987 till now over a period of 35 years is an increase of 145.42%.
Wow.
Yeah. So Neil takes his wallet to check. Now, did you notice that he tries opening the wallet from the wrong side?
Yes,
he tries to open it, and
then
he has to flip it over in order to which is great improv. I wonder if that was done on purpose, or, you know, when Steve Martin got the wallet, he just tried opening it right away and realized that it was wrong and just went with it.
Right. Yeah, no, I think you're probably right.
And then his Neil's response is, "This doesn't prove." And then Del adamantly says again, "Count it, 260." And then that's how the minute gets stopped. That's the end of this minute. So again, you mentioned before about that your the whole thing with the pizza boy could have been cut out. You should probably, you know, I'm sure by now you've listened. But by the time everyone's heard this episode, they've heard the other episodes. I still think that the whole Pizza Boy incident is something that they could have put in, at least in partially, because as we see, they leave in remnants of it. You know, he mentions the fact of ordering pizza. So where did the pizza come from? They mentioned, you know, last week, the whole thing about the beer, or 2 weeks ago, the beer that
are being spilled,
the beer exploding. Yeah. So again, when they got the pizza, they got beer with it. You know, that type of thing. So whatever. Bottom line is that we can't change what John Hughes put in the final cut, and I'm very happy with the final cut. So we take what we get.
In the script, is there a scene when they're eating pizza? They have a conversation about their lives or anything, or is it just
they're eating pizza?
The bit about the tip.
They do eat pizza. Yes.
Which seems very. Yeah, and do they have a conversation about their lives?
Or not really.
Anything funny?
Nothing funny at that point, except for the fact that the pizza is, you know, Neil complains about the fact that he wanted a salad. He didn't want pizza. So Del said they didn't have a salad, so I just put many more vegetables on it, on the pizza.
Great.
So, yeah. So that's how much, that's the way this minute ends. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Not about this minute, no. We can leave things for later on. I suppose my question is, who would you rather have over for dinner, Neil or Del, Rob?
Probably
tending towards having Del.
Really? I think I would rather have Neil.
Yeah.
Wait, as a stranger or as someone you know?
As a stranger, but cinematically, exactly as he presents, maybe at this minute, and you are as you are. Do you think he'd? I don't know. I think Del would have a good story for you, at least. You know, he may blow his nose on your tablecloth or something. But I just think Neil would just politely nod, but not really take in what you're saying at all at this point. Before he's at
okay, I can
the
I
Neil
can hear
we
that.
Meet him in
I can hear that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a very good question. I never even thought about that. So
and just one more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
One more question. Have you found any great escape connections to this movie, either scriptwriters or cast or crew or anything?
No, nothing.
Any tenuous ones?
Nothing at all. But there doesn't need to be. The connection between
that's right,
the connection between season one and season two is me.
I found some very tenuous Clint Eastwood Dirty Harry ones, but maybe we'll talk about them in later minutes. Very tenuous.
All right, great. So in the script... Right. Pretty much stays the same way in this whole minute. The only difference is that at a point where Neil says we're square. So in the script, he says you're no freeloader. That's all he says instead. It's a very minor discrepancy between the two. So it doesn't really, you know, make a difference. But this is a very faithful minute to the original script, I guess you can say. Especially when they leave the pizza reference in there.
Yeah.
So every day we do a segment called Off the Beaten Track, where either my guest or myself tell a little anecdote story of some sort of adventure or misadventure that we might have had. So John, why don't you tell us something that happened to you?
Okay, it's 2008. I'm backpacking, as most Australians want to do, around Europe for about 4 months. I'm in a town called Prilep in Macedonia, just working my way from the Balkans up to Germany. And I hear about this lovely monastery that's just a bit outside of town, up a few hills, called, my Macedonian's pretty bad, but Trevasciek or Tresvakciek Monastery. And uh, I ask, I asked the owner of the small little motel I'm staying with, very dilapidated, probably from the Yugoslav era. And he says, yeah, it's just up there. It's a bit of a hike. So I start walking up there, you know, through a whole lot of, from memory, tobacco drying out on the ground, and walk up sort of the gravel stones. And the monastery's there. It's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I spend 2 hours in there just resting, looking at some lovely Orthodox paintings there, and it's about time to go. So I look back down at the hotel and I think, you know, I don't have to spend 40 minutes the way I came up. I could just go down the rockier end, sort of a few crevices and things. Very bad idea. I end up sliding down. I don't know. I'm a wuss really, but I probably went down about 50 meters. No, it couldn't be that bad. Maybe 30 meters, and just all I have to brace myself at like that angle is my hands. So I just dig my palms into the side, the escarpment of the mountain, and severely hurt and tear away the lower part of my palm, I guess, down at the bottom. And And then I've got to confront with, okay, when I get to the bottom, I'm safe, I'm fine. How do I get to the hotel? I still have to walk sort of through brackish trees and things, shrubs and stuff, very unpleasant. You know, I do the best to wrap my hand around, wrap a beanie on or something around my arm. Get back to there, and the owner of the hotel says, oh, it looks horrible, but you don't need a doctor. Don't need a doctor. So he gives me some alcohol, I think, and some raki or something, and just pours it on it. I grimace in pain. I go back to bed, and I sort of try and sleep as much as I can. This is around the time of the whole 2008 election, so I'm listening to Barack Obama give his speech or something, and I'm half out of it. And then I sort of manage to get to sleep, and I hear some music outside. So I'm still in quite a lot of agony. I've got to go to the doctor the next day, I assure myself. And I walk out there, and there's a whole sea of people sort of mulling around the entrance. It turns out there's a community hall in my hotel, and they're sort of in there dancing. I've just got no sort of sense of who these people are. I don't think they're Macedonian or anything. I hear the language. I can't place it at all. And it turns out they're actually Roma people.
Oh, wow.
I don't mean to offend the group, the race. I don't think we have too many that I know in Australia. I've never met any of them. And I go in there, like one of them drags me in, I guess I'm a novelty or whatever. I go in and sort of they stop dancing and they'll sort of look at me and start smiling. And I don't know if it was a wedding or maybe it was a coming of age, like a bar mitzvah or some sort of thing like that. And it's just really awkward. They're sort of smiling at me, but I'm pretty bit shit in my pants. I probably should have been wearing some brown underwear. But yeah, they have a keyboard there. So I go up there and they're sort of gesturing me, oh, can you play or something? This great cultural moment, I think, maybe. And, you know, I played piano when I was 10, but I hadn't really kept it up. But the only thing I could think of was that corny In Excess song. I know I'm a bad Australian. I don't know what the name of the song was. The one that goes, do, 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 do. There's no use pretending. You know that song? It's got a really corny synth line. And they all burst up laughing. And then I don't know how it happens, but I'm sort of, you know, they give me a drink or whatever. And then they start playing their traditional Roma music. But every now and then they incorporate that do, 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 do. And sort of all look at and laugh at me. And yeah, that's the great moment I had in Macedonia that I survived. And
that's a great story. That's something it really fits in with Off the Beaten Track. No question about that. All right.
Yeah. Off the Beaten Palm Track.
All right. So do you want to tell everyone how they can get in touch with you?
Please, if you've indulged me in my story and you like Dirty Harry, you like Clint Eastwood, okay, he's problematic, he's an old man, me too and all that, but I love Dirty Harry and we spent a podcast like this reviewing every minute. So if you just Google Dirty Harry Minute, that's where you can find my podcast.
And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using. And to find me, you just have to do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, or you can find our website. So, until tomorrow, you're fine.
You're fine.